This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1, 3, and 7-day passes. Watch the Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Snowed in yet again today, but today I don't have any NFL games to watch tonight, so I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. But joining us now is Mitch Light, who covers college football for The Athletic. Mitch, appreciate you for joining us, hoping things have slowed down at least the teeniest, tiniest bit since the national championship game, since the announcement of Nick Saban's retirement. But there has officially been a changing of the guards in Tuscaloosa. Alabama has hired Kalen DeBoer from Washington to be their next head coach. And I don't think this was necessarily the sexy hire. It wasn't a Lane Kiffin or a Dan Lanning or any of the big personality young coaches out there. But in your opinion, was it the right hire?
I think they had, you know, it's common sense, conventional wisdom to say who was going to be on the short list. And if you looked at who got extensions or announced their returns to their current schools on social media, we could figure out who was involved. And I actually think there was a really strong list of candidates. I think Mike Norvell might have been the best of all worlds, like a proven head coach, a guy that, while he's not in the SEC, he recruits against SEC teams. His school's very active and aggressive in NIL, all that stuff. So I thought, you know, he would have been maybe my number one choice, but I'm a huge Kalen DeBoer fan, been, you know, following his career since he basically became the, you know, offensive coordinator to Indiana when I remember they hired him away from Fresno State, has done a fantastic job. And, you know, his resume is just, you know, winners win. It's right. Went like what, like 55-3 at Sioux Falls, and I know it's an NAIA school, but he still won big there, won at Fresno, won at Washington. Now, the fair criticism, if you want to say, is his, you know, recruiting. And it's a different animal in the SEC, and I was preparing some stuff for our podcast. And, you know, right now, class of 2023 at Washington. So that was his first full cycle. Number 26 class. Not bad, not great. And then class of 2024, coming off of his breakthrough season, number 41 class. Now, it was small, 15 players, so that affects your overall rating. But he has not signed a top 200 player in his two full classes at Washington. Now, I know he, you know, it's a different animal at Alabama. He knows that. He's in the midst of hiring a really good staff, and that they'll understand what they have to do to win at Alabama. So I guess, Caroline, my long-winded answer is saying I like the hire a lot with one small caveat. You want to see how he does in recruiting.
And I think it's fair. You know, when you bring in a coach that doesn't have any experience coaching in the South, I mean, Kalen DeBoer has been at Sioux Falls and Fresno State and Washington. He's not familiar with the southeastern portion of the United States. And it was, I think, a fair criticism when LSU hired Brian Kelly as well. But when you bring in a Kalen DeBoer, you know, he's won everywhere where he's been. When we talked with you last week after Nick Saban retired, you said it's good for teams like Tennessee, who maybe, you know, ran into Alabama every year, and that was the biggest roadblock to get past, that maybe playing Nick Saban and playing Alabama stopped them from achieving their goals. What do you think the timeline for Kalen DeBoer is? Can you, you know, now that they have their next head coach, can you look at teams like Tennessee and say, okay, well, you know, at least that big crimson wall is out of the way?
It's still about talent in Alabama and Georgia, and then to a lesser degree, LSU and maybe Texas A&M have the most talent in the SEC. And DeBoer is inheriting a difficult situation from, you know, taking over from Nick Saban, but he's also inheriting, and I know guys have transferred out, but Alabama's 2023 signing class, not this past year, had 9 5-stars in it. It was unprecedented, more than Texas A&M's record-breaking class a couple years ago, 9 5-star players. So he is inheriting a talented roster. Now, we looked at this team last year, and even though they made the playoff, it was not a vintage Alabama team. It wasn't like, wow, they're great at this spot, they're great at this spot. But it's still a ton of talent. So, you know, Tennessee's the world, Auburn, whatever, they're not going to be facing a Nick Saban Alabama team, but they'll be facing a team with a ton of talent with a coach who's done nothing but win. So, while we said it was a good day for Tennessee, it was a good day for a lot of these programs because maybe that Nick Saban game's like near sure death experience. Maybe now it's just a near death experience. And hey, Tennessee beat them 2 years ago, and Auburn's had some success. It's not like he never lost a game.
We're talking with Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, Mitch, let's talk about Jim Harbaugh. Do you think it'd be beneficial for him to stay at Michigan? I mean, he's won a championship. He's done everything that the Michigan fans wanted him to do or expected him to do when he took the job years ago. I know NFL teams are looking at him, but he can have a career like Nick Saban had in Alabama, a tenure like Nick Saban had in Alabama. Do you think he stay, or do you think they ante up some more money and keep him in Michigan?
I don't think it's about the money. I mean, I'm not obviously a Michigan insider. I just think it's about what he wants to do. And if he wanted to stay at Michigan, you know, they Ward Manuel, the AD, said they've got a contract out to him. I'm sure coming off a national championship, you know, I wouldn't say it's a blank check, but probably close to a blank check. And it just seems like he wants to coach in the NFL again. I mean, that's what his actions kind of suggest. And, you know, he interviewed with the Chargers yesterday. And you could argue this is the perfect time to leave. You know, just won a national championship at his alma mater, had a great 3-year run after people kind of wanted to run him out of town there. So, again, I don't pretend to know what makes Jim Harbaugh tick. That's very dangerous to figure out what's in that mind of his. But I think we've seen the last of Jim Harbaugh. Yeah, I think we've seen the last of Jim Harbaugh at Michigan.
Now, they just wrapped up their coaches convention here in Nashville not too long ago. And the only reason I know that because my cousin's a coach and I got a chance to meet up with him for a few hours. But the big topic there was Louisville, Oregon, and FSU, Ohio State, as far as their transfers they got. They did, you know, went into the portal and got some key guys. Out of those teams, who you think benefited the most from the portal?
Oregon did, you know, a lot of it's not new. You know, they appear, there's not many sure things in the portal, especially at like offensive line. A lot of teams try to plug some holes there, but I would say Dillon Gabriel at quarterback for Oregon is as sure of a thing. Like, we know he's going to be really good there, and they've got a very good roster. So I think from a portal standpoint, and they just picked up a few more guys this week, Oregon's in great shape. I think just from a personnel standpoint, though, Ohio State, no program had a better week than Ohio State this past weekend. Obviously, Nick Saban and Alabama were in the news and all that, but they had a lot of guys come back that, you know, I did Travion Henderson, the running back, Emeka Okafor. Willie would remember that name, former NBA player, but Egbuka, talented wide receiver. Both defensive ends who were five stars, Jack Sawyer and JTT. You know, if you would have told me 3 years ago when they signed two of the top six players in the country at defensive end, a premium position in the NFL, if those guys would be back for their senior year, I said, you're crazy. And, you know, part of it, they've been good, but maybe not all America great, but having those guys great. So I think, you know, you saw Ohio State maybe as a fringe top five team and a lot of these way too early top 25s. That's because a lot of people just assumed a lot of these guys were gone. So I think from a personnel standpoint, Ohio State had the best, you know, last week or two, and they're going to be loaded for next year.
Now, the portal is what it is, and you know, we've seen some of the really good stories in regards to the portal, and I'm sure there are many more bad stories in regards to the portal. But do you think they get control of what's going on? Because it just seems like, you know, things are just moving at a fast pace. It seems like it's going to get worse before it gets better. But do you think there's anything they can do to sort of manage it?
Well, one thing that I liked the idea of was, you know, enforcing the multi, you know, two-time transfers, and that seemed to go by the wayside. I admittedly don't follow this end of it as close as, you know, just like teams and personnel in the NCAA rules and stuff. But, you know, obviously that looked like, you know, once you transfer once, you can't transfer again unless you're a grad transfer. And that seemed to, you know, we at least coaches would know their rosters more. Like if they have, but if you get a transfer and he's a sophomore, you know, you're going to have him for the next two or three years. Now, guys, if guys are going to be allowed to continue to transfer multiple times, that just makes it even, you know, so difficult for these coaches to manage the roster. So I don't know, Derek, to answer your question. I mean, there's two different things. One is, can they, you know, NIL, and one is the transfer. They're both equally frustrating for coaches, and coaches want something to get done on that. I almost think there'll be something done on NIL more than transfers because, you know, they've already – allowing the trade. They're not going to go back. They're not going to make kids sit out a year after transferring. So I don't really know what the remedy would be other than tightening the rule on the two-time transfers.
Mitch Light is with us from The Athletic. Mitch, let me get your thoughts on the two coordinators that Kaden DeBoer has come up with. I know one of them has come with him from Washington. The other, I know he has a track record from behind, from the past with. So what do you think of the two coordinators?
Yeah, I mean, fantastic. And, you know, from that regard, you're going to there's not going to be more kind of respected coaching staffs in the country as when you're talking about the head coach and two coordinators. You know, Ryan Grubb is the offensive coordinator who came with Kalen DeBoer from Fresno State to Washington and was just fantastic. And Alabama tried to hire him last year. This wasn't one of those where they looked at him and picked someone else. They, you know, Ryan Grubb flew from Seattle to Washington, and he just decided to go back to Washington because he thought, you know, he's buddies with Kalen DeBoer, but he thought they had something special going, and he was right there. So he will be a head coach very soon. You know, he wanted the Washington head coaching job, but they didn't hire him. And then Kane Womack, they hired away as he was the head coach at South Alabama, 3 year there, and is, you know, did a really good job, won 10 games, I think, 2 years ago. He was on the Indiana staff when Kalen DeBoer was the offensive coordinator. Kane Womack was the defensive coordinator, played at Auburn, again, highly respected. And, you know, this is kind of an interesting move, leaving a group of five school to be a coordinator. It's not unprecedented. You know, Dan Enos, the former Michigan State quarterback, was the head coach at Central Michigan and doing a decent job there about 10, 15 years ago. And he left to become the offensive coordinator, I think, Arkansas at the time. And he's bounced around, obviously got fired from Arkansas this year. So it's actually, I think, Willie, probably a pretty good career move for Kane Womack because he's already proven he can win as a head coach at a G5 level. Then you go back, you go to Alabama and have success as a defensive coordinator. He becomes a really attractive coaching candidate for another SEC job or a Big Ten job if he can, you know, enjoy success, which we all think he will.
Here's the question that is always one, and Mitch, you know the history of the league. You've seen some guys crash and burn, but DeBoer, you just talked about his maybe lack of familiarity with recruiting in the SEC, but I also think, too, there's an art form to being able to handle the spotlight. And Caroline mentioned Brian Kelly, who definitely had experience handling the media and the spotlight, the glare when you're at a high-profile SEC team. I'm wondering about DeBoer's media training. You know, if they lose a game they're not supposed to lose early and everybody's in a panic, which just happens at places like that, can he, you know, stay steady through all that? That's really a skill that you've got to have.
I think so, and I think he has a good temperament for the job. And I don't know Kalen DeBoer, but I worked with Christian Capel, our outstanding former Washington writer, and Christian got to know Kalen pretty well and just raved about him, just being just understands the media, just a very normal person. You know, just you can have a conversation with them. And, you know, you contrast that to, I don't mean to pick on someone like Butch Jones, but like Butch Jones was just like the opposite, you know, just got so wrapped. Like, I thought Butch Jones was a good hire, and I think he's probably a good football coach at Tennessee, but he didn't handle all of the other stuff you're talking about, Willie, being in the spotlight. He couldn't handle all that. And I think Kalen, if you ask coaches, Kalen DeBoer's temperament and personality versus someone like Butch Jones is completely different. So I think even though he hasn't been in the spotlight, you know, Seattle's a pro sports town. Washington's a good program, good tradition, but obviously they're not covered like in Alabama. So this will be new to him, but I think he is well prepared for it.
Where, circling back to D. Mace's line of questioning on the Michigan thing, is there an obvious successor to Harbaugh if he were to up and take an NFL job?
I mean, I think it'd be hard for them not to hire Sherrone Moore, the offensive coordinator. You know, he was highly respected, did a great job with that offense. And then talk about on the job training and difficult situations. You know, he is the head interim or the acting head coach. It takes them into Penn State. They win, they beat Ohio State. The offense again was, you know, it wasn't the most explosive offense, but you know, he, by all accounts, he's highly respected. So I think that they go that route. If not, the two coaches that I would have said that would have been on my short list for Michigan were just recently hired, Kalen DeBoer to Alabama and Jed Fish from Arizona to Washington. I think both those guys there. So, again, I would be surprised if it's not Sherrone Moore.
Well, my last question, I'll throw it back to the snowbirds back there. As I look at the ocean out here, I was disappointed in Charlie Baker's sort of just what I read, a sort of a glossing over, downplaying of the whole sign stealing thing. I mean, here's a guy that's new at his job, and I think he's done some really good things to sort of address, you know, what the issues are, and I'm curious what he tries to do. But that, you know, he just downplayed the depth of what the Big Ten teams did to expose how different, when he just basically said everybody's trying to steal signs. Well, yeah, but not the way that Michigan was doing it. So that really disappointed me.
Yeah, I can't obviously speak for his motives there. You know, the only thing I'm thinking is like in the afterglow, that's the right word, of the championship, just kind of take the high road. You know, he could be saying one thing, but with the investigation doing something else, we don't know that to be the case. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, expect him to say, really, honestly. He's like, yeah, they cheated. I can't believe they, you know, we should strip the trophy. Obviously, you know, not to that extent, but it's a difficult situation for him to be in. And I would think the actions will speak louder than his words right after the championship.
All right, Mitch Light is with us with The Athletic. Mitch, on the topic of Jim Harbaugh, I saw today that he's been negotiating one clause in his contract that he gets immunity if the NCAA does come down with certain sanctions, which I think is the biggest admission of guilt of, hey, if I get trouble, you can't fire me. But I think that's one of the reasons why Jim Harbaugh may choose to leave college football to go to the NFL, is possibly to dodge some potential NCAA violations. So if you have to, you know, if you have to put, you know, you're anchored down, so to speak, of where Jim Harbaugh is going to be coaching in 2024. Is it at Michigan or is it the NFL?
I would say Michigan. I mean, excuse me, NFL. For all the reasons I said before and the reasons what you just said right there, just, you know, clearly he's wants to go back to the NFL. You know, he flirted with the Minnesota Vikings last year, 2 years ago. He's interviewed, you know, he's had ample opportunities to sign a new contract that's been in front of him for, I think, weeks. He's had ample opportunities to say the right things and he hasn't. So, you know, his actions speak loudly. He was in LA, interviewing the Chargers yesterday. So combine all that with the NCAA stuff, it just makes a lot of sense for him to move on. And not that he should take a job because he wants to give someone else the opportunity, but he also has the opportunity to hand over the program, if that's the way to go, to Sharon Moore, a guy who was obviously very loyal to him with his F-bombs on national TV, you know, a strong relationship. So it's not like he's leaving and saying, oh, what's going to happen to my program? There's no caretakers, there's no one to take over. He's got a guy that he obviously likes, and I would think the program would be in really good shape if he does hand it over to him.
Now, Mitch, quickly before we get you out of here, with that being said, should the next coach, if indeed Jim moves on to the NFL, should the next coach be worried about these looming, allegations or this looming investigation over the program? Because, yeah, it may take 2 years, or it may take a year, it may take 10 years, but they may come back and start removing scholarships and vacating wins and stuff like that. So should the next guy be worried?
You know, it's hard to answer. It would not prevent me, if I, like, it was my client, I would say don't not take this job because of that. Just go in prepared. And, you know, I'm sure in the interview process, they might, that's obviously comes up. What are some of the possible, you know, effects, ramifications down the stretch there? But, you know, if you have an opportunity to be the head coach at Michigan, and you're worried about losing 5 scholarships in 2 years, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. It's like the NCAA, at least we haven't seen, it's like, we're not going back to the SMU death penalty days. So very few programs are hit with sanctions or probation, anything that's so hard to overcome. You know, I can't really think of anything that's been crippling in the last 10 years to a program. So, it could be an issue down the road, but I don't think it should really affect anyone's decision.
Can you see them vacating the 23-24 season?
Wouldn't stun me. I'm not a huge fan of vacating. Like, Louisville, I think's national championship is still vacated in basketball. Like, who cares? I mean, they're the national champion, so you don't see a banner up there. So that wouldn't surprise me. I think, where was I This was just, I was involved in a conversation with some people from work who might have been at the, heard Charlie Baker talk, and people kind of mock the vacating wins because no one really cares. But the NCAA evidently said they still like doing it. Not like they like doing it. They're still in favor of that as a punishment because schools don't like it and coaches don't like it. It angers them. So, like, they still think it's a big deal to the schools, even if the fans and media don't care. So I think that's still on the table. Whether it's going to be on the table for Michigan or not, we'll find out. But we'll continue to see that punishment, I think.
But it is so silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
you can take the banner away. You can say it's vacated, but you know, it doesn't take away the championship, really. You know, you still, and I don't think about Reggie Bush not being a Heisman Trophy winner just because they took the trophy away. But I guess the NCAA has to use all of the everything that they can use to try and still be a governing body in college football. But Mitch Light of The Athletic, Mitch, appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us, and we'll chat next week.
All right. Take care, guys.
Yep.
All right, appreciate it. Mitch Light of The Athletic, he does fantastic work covering college football, and we always appreciate him. But coming up next, Titans coaching search. The Titans have cast a very wide net. They've requested to interview several coaches, defensive coaches, offensive coordinators, but their most recent request for an interview from an offensive coordinator across the NFL, I think, set Titans Twitter ablaze when the news came out last night. And we will discuss that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, hey, tune into 102.5 The Game tomorrow night for Vanderbilt men's basketball. The Commodores take on Auburn at home. Tip-off at 8 p.m. with pregame beginning at 7:30. Coverage is also available on the 102.5 The Game app. We are officially in coach hiring season here with the Tennessee Titans. Of course, the Titans have already submitted several requests for coaching interviews. Brian Johnson, Eagles offensive coordinator, which I don't know how that looks after that game against the Bucs last night. Texans offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick, Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan, Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson. There is a long list of coaches that the Titans have submitted requests to interview for. They've also completed interviews, I believe, with four or five coaches already. But this came out last night. This was reported first by Kimberly Brown of Get Up on ESPN. That the Titans have submitted a request to interview Thomas Brown, the Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator. And look, when that was first reported, I saw some Titans fans going absolutely bonkers. Of what in the world would they interview him for? The Carolina Panthers offense was terrible this past year. The Panthers in general were terrible. And look, I get it. I understand. Because the Panthers offense was horrible. We saw that on full display when the Titans played the Panthers earlier this season. Before we kind of get into it, just initial thoughts on the Titans requesting to interview Thomas Brown, the OC in Carolina.
Man, I mean, judging by the debacle that happened in Carolina, I'm not sure, you know, why you choose to go down that route. But then again, it might not have been all his doing. You got to understand this offensive line that we talk about, our offensive line, man, their offensive line was horrendous. They didn't have many playmakers. I know they had Adam Thielen, I believe, but beside Adam Thielen, they didn't have any playmakers. They traded away their two main playmakers in DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey. So you're asking a rookie quarterback to come in, play behind this offensive line and throw to one reliable guy, you know, 9 times out of 10, that ain't going to work. So maybe, you know, he got the raw end of the stick because of the circumstance. But man, oh man, that would be, I can understand you wanting to interview the guy, but man, that you got to convince your fan base, like you better do a lot of tricks to convince your fan base that he would be the guy that is going to usher your team into that new stadium.
Yeah, I didn't know a whole lot about his track record. Because if you just say give me the offensive coordinator from Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, going to go over like a lead balloon. Right. I mean, that just is not. And right. So he's not a household name. When I looked at his credentials, I think he looks like a guy that is well on his way someday to being a head coach. But he's only 37. I'd like to see him do it a little bit longer. I think the most attractive thing, obviously, is his background with the Rams at the height of the Rams' success, right? That's the intrigue, I think. But I don't know him at all. But I do wonder, you know, if you've just had Mike Vrabel, and if you bring in somebody as young with not a ton of credentials, that you're kind of starting with a lot of doubt. I think that you're not going to win the press conference with that at all. But so I can understand the reaction. I do think, though, he's got some things that he's bringing to the table that I think one day could mean he'll be the right guy for a team. I just don't think the time is right for him right now. Yeah.
I think what this is, and you know, whether it be good or bad, I think this is a byproduct of the Rooney Rule. You want to hire guys, you want to interview guys, and you have to interview guys that are minority guys. So I think this sort of falls in that category. Not to say that this, you know, interviewing him will not be beneficial to, you know, Coach Brown or the Tennessee Titans, but I'm saying this is one of these situations where you got a very young guy. He hasn't really had any success in regards to being a coordinator. Now, he's worked with some really good coordinators, but his, you know, him being a coordinator with the Carolina Panthers, it just didn't work for whatever reason. Yeah. I think this is one of those deals where to satisfy the Rooney Rule, to get him an opportunity to sit in front of owners and sort of get comfortable with this process.
And it could be because, you know, Thomas Brown, the OC in Carolina, he certainly doesn't have the resume or experience mm-hmm. that maybe some other candidates have on this list. Like, you look at Brian Callahan, he's been the play caller in Cincinnati for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, Thomas Brown didn't even call plays for the entirety of the Carolina Panthers season this past year. And I think that has more to do with the holes and the flaws in the Rooney Rule.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, you need to satisfy the rule. So interviewing external minority candidates, even if you don't deem them qualified, mm-hmm. Although it's frustrating and it goes against what the Rooney Rule was originally instituted to be, I think that we would be naive to think that this would be the first time that that has ever happened. If a team interviewed a head coaching candidate simply to satisfy the Rooney Rule. But Demas, to your point, it could be, hey, let's get him experience because we think he's a great head coaching candidate here in the next 3 to 5 years.
Now he was he was the assistant head coach with the Rams for 2 years, but also doubled as the running backs coach and then the tight ends coach. So I guess that experience of having to take on, you know, some duties as assistant head coach, that does help. But again, he doesn't have much experience, you know, in that role.
And he won a Super Bowl in LA. Uh-huh. So I think whenever, to Willie's point, you hear, oh, we're going to interview the offensive coordinator from Carolina, you think, what? Mm-hmm. Why? How? That offense was terrible. I also have to look at it. Is he a bad play caller, a bad offensive coordinator, or did he just give him nothing to work with? That offensive line was horrendous. Your best pass catcher was Adam Thielen, and you're working with a rookie quarterback. It just felt kind of doomed to fail from the start. And also, let's remember, Frank Reich called the plays for over half of the season. He started calling plays. He finished up the season calling plays. So Thomas Brown, I don't really even know how much involvement Thomas Brown had in the Carolina Panthers offense. But I think that kind of plays into the question, and I think it's a fair one, of how ready is he to take on a head coaching position? Because he didn't call plays in L.A. with the Rams. Sean McVay is in charge of that offense. He is really the captain of the offense in L.A. I think that Frank Reich was really the captain of that offense in Carolina. And while I think that Thomas Brown is a quality candidate, The experience is my question. Are you ready to be a head coach in this league when you haven't even really served as a true OC in this league?
And that is my question, I think, mm-hmm. for the group that is conducting the interviews for the Titans. And I would presume that it's Rand Carthon. I'm guessing Amy Adams Strunk is in these interviews. Probably Burke Nihil, Adolfo Birch, you know, that group. Let's say that. Are you looking for a Wiz coordinator guy that's got a really fun offense, a really nasty defense? Or are you looking above all else for a leader? I think I don't get too tied up in, you know, what did the guy do as a coordinator? Because I think there's so much more that's important when you're looking for the head coach. You can find a good coordinator, especially if you're connected. I think that's going to be the key. But sometimes I think we just look at, okay, here's a coordinator that had a really good run calling plays for a certain team and say, well, that's got to be the head coach. I think that's a little too simplified to me. I'm looking beyond that.
I mean, I can understand what you're saying, Willie, in regards to that. But, you know, just look at the Titans. After Arthur Smith left, they have not been able to get this OC thing right. Now, I did like Tim Kelly. He did some good things, but we all saw firsthand at how disappointing this offense was. And maybe it wasn't. And I'm not saying that it was Tim Kelly's fault, but I think just, you know, in regards to a head coach, yes, you want a guy that can lead other people in a way that you develop a winning culture and a winning franchise. But you can do that with getting an offensive-minded coach. I think they do have the more and more I think about it. And listen, I wouldn't be opposed to if they got a defensive guy or a guy sort of like Vrabel that, you know, he's neither offense nor defense really, but he's a leader. I wouldn't be opposed to that. But the way the NFL is trending, you know, if you don't get that head coach that has a really good offensive mind, you hire a guy, the offensive coordinator that does, and if that offense starts to, you know, hit the ground, if that offense hits the ground running and start putting up points and look exotic and something that we haven't seen here in Nashville, multiple and everything else, he's going to get another coaching job and you're going to be on that carousel of finding an OC once again.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be the only qualification
exactly
to be a head coach, because I look at Tim Kelly. I think he's a good offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I don't think he is, you know, I don't know if he has head coaching aspirations, but if somebody said, oh, we're going to interview the Titans offensive coordinator to fill our next OC role, that fan base is probably thinking, the Titans? Oh, no, because they had a terrible offensive line. Quarterback got hurt in the middle of the season. You're working with a rookie quarterback. Like, I have to give Thomas Brown some grace because I think that Tim Kelly is a good offensive coordinator. If he had more to work with, like we saw maybe in Houston in his years with Deshaun Watson, I think that he showed that he is a good offensive coordinator. But the perception nationally, at least outside of Nashville and from a lot of people in Nashville, is that he's not a very good offensive coordinator because he didn't have a lot to work with. And I think they look at Mike Vrabel too. I don't think Mike Vrabel is a very good defensive coordinator, but he's a good head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the underlying thing for me right now, though, is what you just brought up, D-Mace. It's, yeah, you want to be a leader of men. Yes, you need to have good command of the locker room. Those are all things that are vital to the health of your team and to the health of your franchise. But it's about what this team needs right now. And what this team needs right now is leadership and consistency for its young quarterback.
Yes, they're going to have to find it. So whoever that guy is, you know, and they have several candidates, they're going to have to be able to come in and, you know, look at this roster and evaluate this roster very quickly and then find out, hey, listen, what does this roster need moving forward? Not just to help the young quarterback. That's a priority, yes. But what else do we need? beside helping out the young quarterback. They need stuff on. They need guys on defense. They need, you know, guys, special team guys. And I'm not talking about the punter or the place kicker. I'm just talking about guys that can play actual special teams, returners that can catch the ball and return it as well. So this, whoever comes in as head coach, they got a lot of work to do because it's not just about the young quarterback. It's about building this roster back up, because if you're just thinking about the young quarterback, you may miss a lot of the holes that you have.
All right, we'll wrap it up with some of your thoughts and your phone calls coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. The Titans have completed 4 interviews with potential head coaching candidates. They have interviewed Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald, Raiders interim head coach Antonio Pierce, Giants offensive coordinator Mike Kafka, and Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. They also have requested to interview Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator Thomas Brown. And I know a whole lot of Titans fans felt some type of way about that. But we have some thoughts in our text line, so unless we have thoughts.
Hey, let's go to the phones.
Let's go to the phones. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025 is the phone number if you want to hop in on the conversation. Steven from Hendersonville texts in, said, I think that it's lazy calling the Titans interviewing Thomas Brown a Rooney Rule interview. He's at least the 4th minority they've targeted. I think it's more likely to investigate the abysmal season that Young had compared to their thoughts of Young as a prospect. That seems infinitely more plausible than complying with the Rooney Rule, which they're already in compliance. Correction there, they are not already in compliance.
That makes no sense. Why would you bring somebody in to inquire about why their season was so bad? And their, it, to me, it doesn't, I'm not, you know, I didn't mean to say it like that in regards to his question, but yeah. It doesn't make sense from a, you know, organizational standpoint. Why are we bringing you in for an interview to ask you, you know, these questions about a quarterback that is not going to be our quarterback, a system that we're not running, an organization that we really don't care too much about? Why are we bringing you here to ask you those questions? If I'm bringing you in, I'm going to ask you, why are you a fit for this job? But then again, I know too that it does. And listen, it's a part of the NFL. There's nothing wrong with saying, you know, what I said. This guy is a young guy. He doesn't have a long resume in regards to coaching, but you give him an interview, which is good for him because now he knows how the process looks. He knows some of the questions they're going to ask, so he will be better prepared when he does, you know, maybe in a year or two when he does get another opportunity to interview for a head coaching job. So, you know, me saying that I think it's more so the Rooney Rule isn't a bad thing. It's just the way the NFL is.
I do think it's a bad look if that is the case, because the NFL instituted the Rooney Rule to give minorities more opportunities to be head coaches in this league. And frankly, there are not enough minority head coaches in this league. But inherently, with any rule, there are loopholes. And unfortunately, those loopholes are taken advantage of. The Titans were accused of doing that their last hiring cycle, when Ray Horton accused the Titans of essentially a sham interview just to satisfy the Rooney Rule. I don't know if that was the case. If it was, I don't think that was the first time that that's ever happened in the NFL. And unfortunately, I don't think that it's going to be the last.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay, so from that standpoint, again, yes, you may look at it because of the Titans' history and say, realistically, are you thinking about hiring, you know, Coach Brown as your next head coach? Probably more than likely not. But we know, you know, he does have some type of history with Rand Carthon. Rand was in Atlanta in 08, and he was there as a player in 08. So I'm sure Rand had, you know, some knowledge of him, scouting him or whatnot. So maybe Rand wants to bring him in, and maybe he don't hire him for the head coaching job, but he may hire him for another job. And Nick brought that up or during a break. Maybe he, yeah, we're bringing you in to interview you for the head coaching job, but you know, maybe it's more of, let me see who you are as a person. Let me sit down and talk with you, because yeah, you more than likely you won't get the head coaching job, but we may want to hire you on as a running backs coach or something else later on down the line.
Well, and also you're looking for that up and coming person who knows, maybe just blows you away in an interview.
Exactly. Yeah.
And maybe it's not this cycle, but a future cycle. You get to know as many candidates as you can possibly know. So there's a lot of different things, and it's hard for all of us, right? When we look at any 37-year-old coach that's never been a head coach before, it's hard for me to be able to say, look, this guy's going to be a great head coach. I don't know. How do you know about any of these guys? Like, I can tell you that about Dan Quinn and the years he had for the Falcons, and, you know, there was really good there. But that's easy for a fan like me just from the outside to say, well, here's a guy that's got coaching experience. I can't differentiate between all the up-and-coming young assistants, but that's what the interview process is for.
Mm-hmm. Another texter texts in, says, I didn't know who Mike McDaniel or Sean McVay were when they got hired, and look how that worked out. Also, Antonio Pierce had no play calling and is successful. I'm happy that we're interviewing everyone. I don't think it's uncommon for fans to not know who some of these coordinators are, but mm-hmm. they're known in, they have a lot of experience in the league.
Coaching world, exactly.
That's one thing that Thomas Brown does not have. Now, I do think the very intriguing thing about Thomas Brown is that he comes from the Sean McVay coaching tree, that he mm-hmm. had experienced a lot of winning with the Rams. But I do think it's very interesting. The Titans are interviewing defensive coordinators, offensive coordinators, Antonio Pierce, who's an interim head coach, who doesn't call plays. Thomas Brown has very limited play calling experience. You have Brian Callahan, who's been calling plays for the last 5 years. It is very, you know, I can't quite put my finger on exactly what the Titans are targeting.
Well, I'll go back to me. I still think you've got to make sure that you're hiring somebody that has excellent leadership skills of a group. I'll give you just an observation I had. What little I watched of the Hard Knocks Chronicle of the Dolphins, Mike McDaniel clearly is a bright-minded offensive coach. I don't think he strikes me as a great leader of NFL players. And I don't know how that's going to play out over the next few years, because he's done enough that he's going to be around. The Dolphins still are looking for that postseason success, but I don't see him as a guy that players rally around. So I don't know. Everybody's going to have strengths and weaknesses. The mm-hmm. scheme is obviously important, but I think the leadership skills might be more important.
It's a fair point. It is a fair point. We'll continue our conversation about the Titans coach coaching search coming up tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company is up next.
Be love and love on your people. Stay warm. Peace.